years, and then a couple of years later actually projected a 3-inch square image of his wife on an object which later became what we know as a television. It was developed. And yet, inventing or coming up with an invention like this and hardly anybody knowing who he is, and it's been an invention that really has impacted our lives and the world, maybe not as much as the others, but you'd think that you'd know who this guy is, just like we know Eli Whitney invented the cotton gin, and we could go on and on and on with people that we associate with certain inventions. And so I was reading an article that says people whose names you've never heard of that changed the world. And while the invention of the television is not something I believe that, you know, changed the world in the most important ways, it's still an important invention that hardly anybody knows who invented it. And so we've been talking about getting in the game, and we've been talking about making a difference. And so a lot of these inventors, Philo Farnsworth as well, made a difference. They got in the game in business and technology, have made a difference in the world. But God is calling us to make a difference in the world in a far more important way. As children of God, as children of light, as children of influence, God is calling us to remember that He created us and recreated us to do good works, that He should be glorified, and that we should do what we can as God calls us with our gifts to make a difference, to get in the game, to serve others, to glorify God. I talked last week about getting in the game as parents and leading and guiding our children, and sometimes that's a tough job, and sometimes we have to do tough things, but it's important for us to remember that getting in the game, being active, being involved as parents is very important. And we're not just talking about the big things. I mean, we can talk about big inventions and famous people, but I want us to understand this morning, and really this is my main point this morning, and this is what I would call kind of my big thought this morning, and that is this. It's that small things, it's not always a big thing. Sometimes it's the very small things, or the small words, the small deeds can make a big deal. When those things are done through faith in God, and belief in God, and belief that God's working through us and making a difference, small deeds, small words, small things can make a powerful difference in God and can make a huge difference. Sometimes those things are planned. Sometimes those things are unplanned. Sometimes we may do something and we may never, ever know the results of us getting in the game and doing something that to somebody else may seem like a very small, insignificant thing. And I think it's exciting. I am excited, and I want you to be excited about this idea of God using us not just in the big, spectacular ways to make a difference, but in God using you right here, right now, in this place, and where you go this week, in the small things that you may do. Being in the right place at the right time to make a big difference with the small things. And so we have a story this morning that's going to illustrate that for us. And so we have a servant girl who is not at home. She's away in another country because there have been raids in the borders where she lives there in Israel, and she's been taken captive as a slave, as a servant in Aram. And there she is. And there we're introduced to not only her, but we're introduced to the main character, or in some ways, the whole theme of this story revolves around a man named Naaman. Now, if you have a background in Churches of Christ, I know that you know who Naaman is. Have you ever, for example, watched Jeopardy? And most of the time, I don't even watch Jeopardy because basically it makes me feel really dumb to watch Jeopardy, and I don't like feeling dumb. But if I happen to be watching Jeopardy and they're giving those categories, And you know, they have this category and that category, and you're shaking your head, you know, history in the 15th century, blah, blah, blah. And then when you see that category, the Bible, what do you do? Most of you, at least I do. I say, man, I got this. At least in my mind, I think those Bible questions on Jeopardy are really easy. At least they are, and I'm not bragging or anything, because, you know, when the categories, you know, 15th century Greek poets, I mean, I totally flub it. But when it comes to those Bible categories, I just absolutely love them. And I just think about, you know, what if there was like a Jeopardy where we were maybe pitted against another religious group. It doesn't matter, you know, what it would be. You know, a Church of Christ, and I'm just grabbing this out of thin air, we're going against the Unitarians. And we're on Jeopardy, kind of like a Bible quiz. And we're doing that. How would you feel if the category Naaman came up? For many of us, we'd say, I got this. We know everything about Naaman, and we primarily know him because, and I'm getting ahead of myself a little bit here, but he dipped in the Jordan 7 times. He had leprosy, and he was cleansed of that leprosy. And then a lot of times, I guess in classes and sermons you may have heard growing up or in other places, then the comparison is made with the dipping of Naaman in the Jordan to be cured of his leprosy and us dipping down in the water to be cleansed of our sins in the waters of baptism. Now tell me, raise your hand if you're familiar with that angle or not. Raise your hand high. Many of us are, if we have a background in Churches of Christ, especially maybe other backgrounds. And I'm not saying that there is not a parallel between the two, because I do believe there is a parallel between the two, not in every way. And I'll say something about that at the end of my lesson. But I mainly want to focus on what's happening now in Naaman's life. He's powerful. He's a commander of the army. He's probably very influential. I have no doubt that he is very wealthy because of his position. He has been blessed. We are told in the account he is blessed by God, has been blessed by God to have victories in war. And so I think it's very important and significant that there is something about this man that is special, that he is powerful, he's influential, he's good at what he does. But here's the fly in the ointment. He has leprosy. And that's how it was introduced in the reading by Tim this morning. And so this particular, I'm no Hebrew word expert, but from what the experts do say about this word may not just mean leprosy, but it can refer to any kind of serious skin disease. And so he may have been contagious, he may not have been. If it's full-blown leprosy, as we think of it a lot of times, it may have been the kind of situation where he had to be isolated from others. And I don't quite get that impression from what's going on here. But what he has is serious. It's not just a little thing. It's important enough that we're introduced to him because of this situation. It's not just a little skin rash. I have a little eczema. After I preach, you can come up and take a look at it if you want to. I have eczema that pops up on my elbows. I don't know why that happens. So I went to the dermatologist. I have some cream I put on it. Sometimes I get a little bit of it in my ears. It's no big deal. But we can surmise from the whole context of this story, this was a big deal. And this was something serious enough that something like this happened. He's probably in pain. And he's dealing with something that is seriously affecting his life. And so this servant girl speaks up, and she says something to his wife, and she is her servant. And so she says, if only Naaman, if only my master, if he could be with, if he could go to, if he could see the prophet in Israel, I know he could be cleansed. I know it could be taken care of. And so she speaks this simple word to the one she is serving, and then word is shared with Naaman, and then the whole wheel of the process gets going. And so once the word gets out, the king of Aram hears about it. He's ready to send Naaman with an entourage to Samaria to approach the king, believing that the king could do something about it. Now, why they go to the king and why they don't try to seek out Elisha right off the bat, because Elisha is this prophet at this time, it may very well be because they just associated someone with that kind of power and influence, and that they maybe just assumed the king of Israel was also the prophet, and that it would not have been unusual to think in that way. And so that's where they go. And they're not going with just a little bit. They're going with a lot. If you're traveling as a commander of the army and you are doing something of this nature in an official way, you're not just going with two or three people. You're going with a sizable portion of the army. We're told in the text there were horses and chariots, and there was lots of silver, and there was quite a bit of gold, I think about 120 pounds of gold, and 10 outfits. And these weren't just like, you know, blue jeans or overalls or something like that. These would have been outfits that were literally fit for a king. And so they're traveling. In today's terms, the mules are probably carrying this gold and this silver, the equivalent in today's terms of about 3 million. If you take the silver and you take the gold and you look at the value of gold and silver today, about $3 million worth of loot. Now, I want you to think about that. It's a big deal. Donkeys, horses, chariots, the commander of the army, and then they finally approach Joram, King Joram, and that's where we'll pick up in the story. And so they get there, they go there with a letter, they present it to the king, and this is how he replies. As soon as the king of Israel read the letter, he tore his robes and said, "Am I God that I can kill and bring back to life? Why does this fella send someone to me to be cured of his leprosy? See how he's trying to pick a quarrel with me." Now, I know when you first read that and you've read the story before, maybe some of you think maybe King Joram is just having a bad hair day or something, that he just got up on the wrong side of the bed, he's acting kind of touchy. But I want you to think now just a minute about what's happening. Here is this commander from this nation that's to the northeast of you there, that later became Syria, and he's coming to the king with a request to do something that he knows he can't do. And he's thinking they should know that. And so he's wondering right now at this point, is this some kind of sinister plot to maybe start some fight or some war to approach me and make a request of me that I know I can't do? And he's just downright, I don't know, he's obviously offended, but he obviously knows he can't do it. And so he is so upset, he tears his clothes. And back in that day, that would be a sign of just utter emotion and being upset, or in many different ways. But it definitely meant, among other things, I'm not happy and I'm upset about this. And so he basically said, "I'm not God. I can't do it. Why are you coming to me?" And as this is going on, word finally gets to Elisha. And I don't know how much time is going on here, but I guess the people there in Samaria, they're wondering what's going on. Here's the commander of the army, and they've come with all the horses and chariots and the mules, and they've come before the king, and now they're just kind of sitting waiting there, kind of wondering what to do. And you're sure, you got to be positive that people in the town, that they're just talking, what's going on? But word finally does get to Elisha, and Elisha sends word and says, "King, why did you tear your robes?" In other words, you feel like you're upset about this. You feel like nothing can be done about this. Well, certainly something can be done about this. I want you to have Naaman sent to me, and then when he comes to me, he's going to find out that there is a prophet in Israel. He's going to find out that there is power in God. He is going to find out that taking this long trip with all these people in this entourage was not a waste of time. Send them to me. And so I'm sure that Naaman And his people, they're happy to hear that. They're thinking, finally, yes, something's going to be done. And so they approach Elisha's house. And what he hears and what he's told to do and how he is received is not what he expected. Let's pick up in verse 10. It says in verse 10, Elisha sent a messenger to say to him, "Go wash yourself 7 times in the Jordan, and your flesh will be restored, and you will be cleansed." Now, I know a lot of us, we are so used to that. You know, we can just say it by heart what he's supposed to do. But once again, I want you to remember who he is. He's come with, in our day, millions of dollars worth of gifts. He is expecting something a lot more formal. He is expecting something quite different. And this is absolutely, this is an offense to him. He's mad. He's angry. I feel like he feels offended. I don't think there's any doubt that he feels like he's being asked to do something that is undignified. And so he is in, and listen, not only that, he goes to the door, maybe he's right there at the gate, and the prophet doesn't even come out to him. Elijah doesn't even go to him. He just sends one of his servants to tell him what to do. And then they tell him to go dip 7 times in that measly, muddy Jordan River. And I think he's enraged. He is humiliated. Verse 11 says, Naaman went away angry and said, "I thought that he would surely come out to me and stand and call on the name of the Lord his God and wave his hand over the spot and cure me of my leprosy. Are not the Abana and the Pharpar, the rivers of Damascus, better than any of these waters of Israel? Couldn't I wash in them and be cleansed?" And so he turned and went off in a rage. And so if you're just following the story and there's different scenes and different plots, you're wondering right now, well, is this the end of the story? Does he return to Damascus still with his leprosy, and that's the end of the story? No, that isn't how the story ends. But there was something he needed to learn. And it wasn't just how to get rid of that skin disease that you have. He needed to learn that while he was a commander, and while he was powerful, and while he was worthy of better treatment than he got when he went there with all his things, he needed to learn that there was a greater, more powerful master, there was a more powerful force in this world, and he needed to humble himself before that God. But he, at this point, he's not doing that. And then it's at that point, some servants come to him. It says in verse 13, Naaman's servants went to him and said, "My father, if the prophet has told you, if he had told you to do some great thing, would you not have done it? How much more wash and be cleansed?" So he went down as the man of God had told him, and his flesh was restored and became clean like that of a young boy. Once again, we have the voice of someone else speaking, making a difference and bringing about a result. And the result of this servant's, and he was, I will tell you, he was bold. And I don't care if he had a good relationship with this servant. He's already made up his mind. He's headed back with his leprosy. And the servants, they're talking, and they come to him together. But they couldn't all say it at the same time. So one of them spoke on behalf of the others and said, "Lord," or "Master," what, you know, however they addressed him, if you had been asked to do something or be involved in something that was more fitting for your power and prestige and dignity, you're asked to do that, and you're not willing to do it. Why can't you do, and what I have up here, this is the Grady translation. This isn't exactly how it reads. But you would have done something great and spectacular, more with more show to be healed. But why not this simple thing? Why not this simple thing? And once again, someone intercedes, and he does it, and he not only is healed of this disease, it says his skin was like the skin of a baby. He was cleansed, and he got brand new skin on top of that. And he is so excited. I can just hear the cheers of the soldiers and everybody who's come in that caravan. They want to head back. They want to say thank you. They want to give those gifts to Elisha to express their gratitude. And they try to do that. And Elisha says, absolutely not. I'm not going to take anything. He wanted them to understand that the gifts of God cannot be bought. And then he says to him, after he stands before Elisha and makes this statement, now I know there is no God in all the world except Israel. And then when Elisha doesn't accept the gift, he says, let me take some earth. I want to go back. I want to worship the true God that I believe in now, and I want to take some of this earth with me, and I want to set up an altar in my country, and I want to bow down, and I want to worship this true God. Isn't that amazing? But I don't want us to forget how this story started. I don't want us to forget, in my mind, who is one of the real true heroes in this story. And I want us to be reminded, and you to be reminded, us to be reminded, that this never would have happened to this man if someone hadn't spoken. And I want to go back to my main thought of the day, and that is sometimes small words, small deeds, spoken in faith, with faith in a big God, can make a huge difference. And this whole process was started by the words of a servant girl, and we don't even know her name. We don't know her name. We don't know everything about how she got there. We don't know her full story. We don't know if she was out picking blackberries or other berries outside her home, and some of these skirmishes are going on, and some of the soldiers and others see an opportunity to take a prisoner of war, and they take her back. I don't know if her home was destroyed and her mother and father were killed, or if they were taken captive. I don't know if this girl who is taken from her home and now a servant in a foreign country, having to learn a new language in a new circumstance, I don't know if she cried herself to sleep for night upon night upon night. But I do know this, that this servant girl never lost faith in God. That this servant girl still lived by faith and still had God in her heart. And still, in this foreign land, in these circumstances, and everything as far as we can read, it seems like they treated her well, but we can't even be sure about that. But I'm assuming in this relationship that they had that she was treated well, but still, how easy it might be to be tempted to be bitter and angry, and he has leprosy and he can die with leprosy. But that's not what happened. And they are so different. They are so different. He's a man, she's female. He is rich and she is poor. He is older, she is younger. He's a slave owner and she's the slave. He's the captain, she's the captive. He's famous, and we don't know her name. He's Gentile and worships Ramon, and she is Jewish and worships Yahweh God. But here's another difference. He was sick and desperate, and she was the avenue that brought him not only to physical healing, but brought him to faith in God. Simple words spoken in faith. And so this is my call. This is your call. This is our challenge. It's to take action, believing that these small things can be used by God for good, and that many times they add up. Listen, that's God's math. I don't know about new math or today's math, but I know this is how God's math works. God's math multiplies. So He takes one simple sentence from one obscure girl, and it multiplies to the point that we see what happens, and this man believes in God. These things add up. I don't want you to think that little things don't matter. Some of us are going to be pulling weeds today outside and working in these plant beds. I know it doesn't seem like anything, but as I said 2 weeks ago, it's not busy work, because all these little things add up. And you never know if someone who's looking for a new church, maybe they don't understand a lot about Jesus, for whatever reason, they come here and they see that plant bed. My guess is that they're not going to say, that is the most fantastic looking plant bed I've ever seen. I want to be a part of this church. I doubt that. But I want to tell you that all these little things, they add up. And I know sometimes we think that we're small and insignificant, and we think we'll never make a difference like Philo Farnsworth. I'll never be a household name like him. But it doesn't matter, because God can still do extraordinary things through ordinary people. I didn't say spectacular. It's not always spectacular. Sometimes it's very simple. Secondly, I challenge you to be intentional with what you do. And when I say intentional, I challenge you to think about, pray about, to reflect upon people in your life you know right now who could be blessed by a simple word or a simple deed or encouragement that could make a difference in their life forever. I think of when it was first said to me by a lady in Huntsville, Alabama, when I was eating dinner with them on a Wednesday night. She said, "Why don't you go to church with us tonight?" And then I finally did. And then a couple of weeks later, I think they targeted me, because they're inviting me to dinner a lot of times on Wednesday nights. And so finally that became a habit. And so I really do think that it was kind of a setup, quite honestly. But I was willing to do it. I liked the food. They had a pretty daughter. But they did something, and they said something. Who do you know who needs Jesus? What can you say or do to make a difference? And I'm going to close with this point, and it's going to be a 30-second point. Keep your eyes open to the unplanned and the unexpected. Because I believe if you're praying for God to open doors for you, and you're looking this week, God may very well send somebody right in your lap to do that simple thing, to make difference in an eternity. So sometimes we need to expect the unexpected. Certainly Naaman experienced the unexpected, didn't he? It wasn't everything he expected. And he humbled himself before the God, dipped 7 times in that muddy Jordan, and he was cleansed, and he came to faith in God. Now, there aren't parallels everywhere with what Naaman did in baptism. Because when we submit in baptism and we're buried in that water, our faith, our trust is completely in a crucified and risen Christ who died for us. And we're not putting faith in anything else but Jesus when we go down into that water. Even the fact that we don't baptize ourselves, that someone baptizes us, it's not a work that we do to earn anything. Naaman dipped himself 7 times. So if someone else does it to us, it's totally trusting God. Where God says, I'll meet you. You may not be ready for that this morning. You may want to talk, study, discuss that more. We're more than willing to meet with you, talk with you. You may not even fully believe in God. We still want to take you where you are and work with you to bring you to the point. And I know, I believe, and I know many people here believe in that God who is real and who makes a difference and can heal the body and heal the spirit. So however you need to respond, it may not be right now. If it is, that's wonderful. Let us know, whether it's baptism, anything else. We want to help you and encourage you. Let's all stand and sing together.
There's a peace I've come to know, though my heart and flesh may fail. There's an anchor for my soul. I can say it is well. Jesus has overcome, and the grave is overwhelmed. The victory is won. He is risen from the dead, and I will rise when he calls my name. No more sorrow, no more pain. I will rise on eagle's wings before my God, fall on my knees and rise. I will rise, and I hear the voice of many angels. Worthy is the Lamb, and I hear the cry of every longing heart. Worthy is the Lamb, worthy is the Lamb, and I will rise when he calls my name. No more sorrow, no more pain. I will rise on eagle's wings before my God, fall on my knees and rise. I will rise. Father, thank you so much for our opportunity to come here today and worship you, and just help us throughout this week. Help us to get in the game. Help us to look for those opportunities to serve you and serve others. It's in Christ's name we pray. Amen.